Hello, this is a show from Radia. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
Now it came about in the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day of the month, while I was in the midst of the exiled people by the river Kibar, that the heavens were opened, and I began to see visions of God. And I began to see, and look, there was a tempestuous wind coming from the north, a great cloud mass, and quivering fire. And it had a brightness all around, and out of the midst of it there was something like the look of electrum out of the midst of the fire. And out of the midst of it there was the likeness of four living creatures. And this was how they looked. They had the likeness of earthling man, and each one had four faces, and each one of them four wings. And their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of the foot of a calf, and they were gleaming as with the glow of burnished copper. And there were the hands of a man under their wings on their four sides, and the four of them had their faces and their wings. Their wings were joining one to the other. They would not turn when they went. They would go each one straight forward. And as for the likeness of their faces, the four of them had a man's face, with a lion's face to the right, and the four of them had a bull's face on the left. The four of them also had an eagle's face. That is the way their faces were. And their wings were spreading out upward. Each one had two joining to each other, and two were covering their bodies. And they would go, each one, straight forward. To wherever the spirit would incline to go, they would go. They would not turn as they went. And as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire. Something like the appearance of torches was moving back and forth between the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire there was lightning going forth. And on the part of the living creatures there was a going forth and a returning, as with the appearance of the lightning. As I kept seeing the living creatures, why, look, there was one wheel on the earth beside the living creatures, by the four faces of each. As for the appearance of the wheels and their structure, it was like the glow of chrysolite. The four of them had one likeness, and their appearance and their structure were just as when a wheel proved to be in the midst of a wheel. When they went, they would go on their four respective sides. They would not turn another way when they went. And as for their rims, they had such height that they caused fearfulness, and their rims were full of eyes, all around the four of them. And when the living creatures went, the wheels would go beside them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels would be lifted up. Wherever the spirit inclined to go, they would go. The spirit inclining to go there. And the wheels themselves would be lifted up close alongside them. For the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels.
Aerial phenomena appear and alter the course of human history. To religious scholars, these stories are an infallible record of God's presence and godly events. But some modern-day researchers offer a different theory. Perhaps these stories really describe alien visitations.
Is it possible that extraterrestrials have been involved in human history for thousands of years, and if so, did they have contact with the biblical people? And as you look in the Bible, there are many reports of UFOs that contact biblical people. A chariot of fire that abducts Elijah and takes him off into the sky.
Elijah. Elijah was one of the most revered Jewish prophets of his day. According to ufologists, the biblical account of his encounter with chariots of fire is a detailed description of what might be termed a UFO.
And the clue to this cosmic riddle may be found in the ancient book of Genesis. And back there in chapter 6, we are told of a very amazing and bizarre event. The sons of God saw the daughters of men and saw that they were beautiful, and they lusted after them. And then we read they married them and sired children from them. For the past 1500 years, most scholars, including evangelical scholars, have interpreted the sons of God as the good sons of Seth and the daughters of men as the wicked daughters of Cain. They've adopted that interpretation because the other one is so bizarre and outlandish. The ancient interpretation, and in my opinion the correct one, is that the sons of God were demonic beings or fallen angels. And that they came down to earth, they lusted after the daughters of men, they married them, and produced this amazing progeny, this hybrid progeny of the Nephilim. And the very word Nephilim does not mean giants. It comes from the root Nephal, fallen one.
All civilizations attribute their genesis to contact with the gods. In their historical and spiritual texts, our ancestors maintained that immortal beings from elsewhere were responsible for the development of life on Earth. Despite common acceptance of these creation tales as mythology, sightings of supernatural beings and contact with them have persisted through to the 21st century. Could this be the worldwide UFO phenomenon? According to recorded history, laws, sciences, architecture, even writing itself, stem from knowledge received from the gods. The Bible has many accounts of flying objects and beings from elsewhere coming to the earth. Can these accounts shed light on the nature of the UFOs? Are they mere observers or participants on the world stage? Are they all benign, or do they have an agenda? And finally, do the UFOs fall in the scope of biblical prophecy?
Sumerian culture, now considered to be the cradle of our civilization. The people then had extraordinary astronomical knowledge. Zechariah Sitchin.
If somebody says, where did you get the idea? I say, I read the Sumerian tablet, and that's what they say. They say that our solar system is made up of 12 members. And this is stated in the Sumerian text over and over and over again, not one time. And they say there is the sun, which is in the center, not like the Greeks or others thought that the earth is in the center, the sun. There's the moon, which they gave reasons why they considered it a member by its own. And 10, not 9, but 10 planets. And every 3,600 years, it comes between Mars and Jupiter, close to us. And it is then, they said, that people are people that look like us, not with little horns or green, people they look that look like us started to come between their planet and Earth about 450,000 years ago. Why do they look like us? We look like them. Because if you know the Bible, which is based on the Sumerian tales, at some point they engaged in genetic engineering and mixed their genes with the genes of Homo erectus. We can use various scientific terms, but let's say with the early hominids, to bring about Homo sapiens, us.
They had the first bicameral Congress, they had the first writing, they had the first school system, you know, you just go on and on and on. So you have to ask, well, where did all this come from? And I think that you need to turn to the ancient Sumerians themselves and listen very carefully to what they have to say, because what they have to say, not just in one place, but over and over and over again, is that they were taught civilization by these beings that came from the heavens to the earth. They call them the Anunnaki.
The writings and the pictorial evidence left behind by the Sumerians going back 6,000 years speak and depict people who came from another planet called Nibiru. And many of the depictions show them much bigger, at least by a third, perhaps more than the average a human being, so they were giants.
The most significant, I think, from the event described in the Bible is probably Ezekiel. Because Ezekiel is very detailed. There are different interpretations of what he wrote, and of course what we have in the Bible was written centuries after Ezekiel's death. But it was written from the tradition that he left and that you know, crossed the centuries. What he describes is very interesting because he uses words that are used only once in the Bible, and he even uses a word that's used only once in the language of the time. So he was obviously very distraught and very disoriented by what he saw. It's a classic abduction. And by the way, people studying abduction believe that abductions were started recently. I'm sure you've interviewed some of these authors, that it's a recent phenomenon and it shows a new phase in the phenomenon. And that's not true. I mean, abductions go back. There are many cases of abductions in our chronology, in our records. Ezekiel was transported to a faraway mountain, and he was in shock. And what he describes were wheels within wheels, and he describes four beings that left him completely confounded. When we analyze the patterns in these 500 cases, the patterns that emerge are absolutely similar to patterns we extract from contemporary databases. And that's where we're tempted to say this is the same phenomenon, it's always been with us. This is 13th century China, okay? I get letters like this from readers of my books today. Exactly, almost the same words. I have the impression I've come out of a dream. I have no reasonable explanation. Please explain this to me. I wrote it down as I saw it. You know, it's a completely modern description. They were seen, of course, you know, anything in the sky at that time was interpreted by people, usually official astrologers and so on, suddenly in the early centuries, as announcing things or being guided by God, by whatever God they were worshipping.
One being physically separate, but with a collective consciousness. More powerful together than they can ever be apart. Imagine what they could tell us. Into space, into the space between spaces.
Two sons went to school, and I was getting changed, and I heard this terrific noise. It was just like a giant cauldron of water being poured onto a fire, a shh sort of noise, you know. And the first reaction was, oh, the children. I thought maybe a plane was crashing or something like that. And I slipped my jumper on and went outside to find my two sons lying flat on the ground in the garden in front of the house, shouting, "Mummy, Mummy, there's a flying saucer." Well, naturally, I just said, "Come on, don't be stupid. Come in the house." But felt sort of a strange sensation. Wended my way up the side of the house to where we had a pump where we used to get all our water from, and automatically looked up to see this, all I can describe, this huge Mexican hat. It was stationary, this thing, and it was bright silver in colour, and it had a dome. A dome. It was tilted to sort of, I could see the occupants in it.
You saw people in it?
I saw people in it. There were two people in there. These people were beautiful people. That's the only way I can describe them. They had long golden hair, like a page boy Bob, just like the old kings. You used to see photographs of the old kings. And the colour of the hair was golden. Now, I was really... They had a sort of a pole neck jumper affair, like a ski top suit, in pale blue. Now, these people weren't sat behind, one behind the other. They were sat together, but this, whatever it was tilted so that I could see them and they could see me.
Were you looking at them through windows, through portholes?
No, not portholes. It was just sort of the, like a cockpit, I suppose, that had this perspect or glass or whatever it was. They could see me anyway and I could see them. And they had beautiful faces. I shall never forget their faces as long as I live. Their forehead seemed to be a bit larger than, you know, the bottom of their faces as normal people you would expect to see. But maybe this was just the whatever they had around their heads, which was like a transparent fishbowl. And they just looked. And I was absolutely paralytic with fear. I couldn't move, although my mind was ticking over. And they looked so sympathetic.
It began for me in 1963 when I was assigned to the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers in Europe. I arrived in the summer of 63 and I was assigned to the Operations Division. I was further assigned to what we call SHOC, the War Room, the Supreme Headquarters Operations Center. And at that time I was given a cosmic top secret clearance, which was and still is the highest level of security access that NATO has. When I was assigned to the war room, I learned that a study had been initiated in 1961, and everybody was talking about it. They were gossiping about it. And the subject was UFOs, and that intrigued me a bit. When that study was concluded in 1964, and it was published, and I was still working in the war room at that time, I had access to this document. I had a chance to read it. And having been exposed to it, I must tell you honestly that my life has never, ever quite been the same. Because I read firsthand reports, verifiable NATO military material that indicated that the UFOs were not only real, but they represented something far beyond anything I had ever imagined before. When the study was concluded in 64, they concluded that there were four different groups apparently coming and visiting us. Out of those four different groups, one group looked exactly like we do, so much so that they could sit beside you in a restaurant or in an airplane from a theater, and you'd never know. But that was only part of the story. The shape conclusions in 64 were the four groups that we knew of. They were apparently interplanetary. Some very likely were interstellar. They even concluded that some of them could be intergalactic. When I retired in 1976, many of our military people knew at that point that we were not simply dealing with visitations from people from other planets and star systems. They had concluded by 76 that some of these visitors very well might be multidimensional in their source. The evidence that we had collected and the evidence that they had repeatedly demonstrated to us, and that's no accident, it became very clear after a time that there was a program or a process of some kind underway. That they had demonstrated over and over and over again that they apparently were able to manipulate matter and time. Now this really shook up our scientists. The idea that there could be intelligences from somewhere else, from other dimensions coming and going into our reality. It's been quite a shakeup in traditional science. We are apparently part of an infinite universe filled with intelligent life. I find that exciting. It doesn't frighten me. The shape study concluded in 64 that if they, whoever they were malevolent or hostile, that they could have taken this planet and cleaned it up and eliminated us, turned us into dog food or whatever, a long, long time ago. That the historical evidence indicates that they've been with us a long time, and I've concluded that we had what I like to call an intimate interrelationship with at least one of those groups, the group that looks exactly like we do. And that point is, I don't like the word alien. I don't think the term alien is appropriate at all here. I like to refer to them as family. We're related to them. I think they had a hand in our being here. And I think the time has come where we're about to meet our extended family. It's going to be very soon. I believe that this reality, once we have accepted it and understood it and gone beyond the fear, will bring about an expansion of consciousness in the human race that will truly help us and prepare us to go out there and take our rightful place in that infinite community of life.
Hello, this is a show from Radia. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?